the Oscar thing, might as well just go from the top. I think it's great, by the way, that that Faye and Warren definitely are going to come back. You know, there was it wasn't that long. People didn't wait. I mean, people generally believe that if TMZ is going to banner something and they say we were here, we were there, we saw them rehearse, they're doing it. Nobody did their own independent confirmation. They all went with TMZ. So it shows you that even though it's kind of, you know, icky in its worldview, people respect TMZ for getting the story. If it happened, they believe it. I mean, if they got it, if they say it happened, people don't question it too much as a rule.
Yeah, but I mean, it would look pretty bad for TMZ if they were wrong on this, because they're basically giving out the big surprise presenters.
Yeah,
revealing the surprise presenters for the 90th Academy Awards. I'm gonna stay all the way till the end just for that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some people can't stomach watching the 4 hour ceremony, but now that we know that those two are gonna present, how can you not
stay? Yeah,
for that final hour.
Yeah. Where are you gonna watch it? Just home, or go to a party, or?
Yeah. You're going to be at the press lounge?
No, I never, ever, ever have attended, even in my Entertainment Weekly days, even when I was with LA Times, I've never once gone and gotten credentials and been backstage, because you basically miss everything. And all you have to do is, you know, you're supposed to comment or write about supplementary remarks or observations that the winners had. It's not that interesting, and of course today the whole thing is just live blogging, and you know, there's not a lot more to say other than, you know, it's interesting to talk about it afterwards, but to not be there and not be, you have to have a kind of a feeling of immediacy about things. So
I think Sasha's going again this year.
Yeah, she does this, and then she gets the seat up in heaven. I think, I don't know, is it three balconies? I've been in the
the nosebleeds.
Huh?
It's the nosebleeds.
The what week?
Oh, the nosebleeds.
Nosebleed. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the nosebleeds. To be there, and you know when she left last year's ceremony before the Best Picture fiasco happened.
That I've forgotten. Really? Because she didn't want to get caught with the parking or something? Or why did she...
Yeah, she didn't want to get caught in traffic, I think.
Oh, my God.
She missed...
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
The historic moment that happened.
I totally... I guess I'd missed that and all the... but anyway. Yeah. All right, so my take on Best Picture is that my sense is that it seemed, with all the awards that it got, the Guild Awards and everything, that Shape of Water had it, and then it seemed as if people started to say, well, maybe not going to be a slam dunk to win, but Guillermo's definitely got it for Best Director, but the Three Billboards is looking stronger and stronger, and it seemed to pick up momentum with the BAFTAs. And there is that significant portion, as you reminded me yesterday, that the Gold Derby people have now come out all of a sudden on Get Outside. I'm never going to understand that, but except I see it as a perverse way of looking at things. But they know that the last 2 years of editions, where they now, the new kids, they are about 17-18% of the total membership, but they're very unified in their approach or attitude about the Oscars. Let's get some new people in. Let's not do the same old, same old. So, you know.
Well, one thing I'm noticing with all the pundits this year is that they're not absolutely comfortable with whatever they're predicting for Best Picture. There's always Shape of Water, but, or Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, but, you know, there's always a hesitation, because this has been such an unpredictable year to for Best Picture. And I don't know if it has to do with, well, maybe the lack of quality great movies that were released, or just how there's been just so many movements that we just can't pick a movement to go with.
Yeah.
You know, they say it's the Year of the Ladies. They say it's maybe another African-American-based film will win. But my gut says Get Out, because it's the most well-liked movie.
Amongst those people, amongst the 18% or the 17%, they are definitely committed to voting for that film, because they don't want to put in any typical Oscar Beatty movie, and this has, in their view, something a lot has a, you know, it's they will not budge off this. This is basically a genre movie that is incorporates, it puts a racial stamp on a Stepford Wives concept, and they won't budge. They just think it's wonderful, and I don't know, there doesn't seem any way to address it other than, I respect your enthusiasm for any film, but what is the big thing here? I mean, it's not that great. Take it easy, you know, but people, they will not back off, so there's no talking to them, you know.
Yeah, but I think it's because it's the crowd pleaser, too. And if you look at all the other films, they're not really crowd pleasers, and they seem to, quite honestly, you know, be very divisive. You know, Dunkirk, there's people saying it's too cold. Phantom Thread, people are saying it's too artsy. Lady Bird, people are saying, what was the big deal? The Post, too Oscar bait. Shape of Water, we've already heard of Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm.
Three Billboards has had a backlash. I mean, there's all distinct flaws in these films in terms of pleasing a majority. And I find that Get Out is a crowd pleaser, and that's why I'm picking it to win Best Picture, because it basically is the film that everyone can unequivocally say, yeah, that was good. You know? Because every other movie seems to be love it or hate it, from what I've gathered. There's people that really despise Shape of Water. There's people that really despise Three Billboards. You know, and there's people that really despise Dunkirk. So I see Get Out winning this thing.
Yeah.
You know?
What it portends.
You seem frustrated.
Well, the idea of that film winning, you know, is just beyond me that it can do that. I mean, I'm no fan or admirer of the standard Oscar Beatty movie always getting in. I hate that certain Oscar Beatty movies have won in the past. I was in pain when Chicago won. I couldn't stand the idea of The Artist winning. All these films that I've despised, The King's Speech, I'm really, really, nobody went through more, you know, spasms of unhappiness than I about these films. But to swing all the way over to a genre film it just doesn't resonate. I'm sorry, you know. I mean, if you had told me, listen, I'm from March of 2018. Don't ask me how, but that's where I'm from. And I'm telling you, man, this movie you just saw at the Pacific Grove, the one you just thought was pretty good, but not that good. I mean, take it easy. Believe me, it's going to win Best Picture. I said, no fucking way. But that could have been what I was about. You know, that would have been my reaction. And I'm still like, you know, there's no way to articulate other than, come on, it's got to have a dimensionality. It's got to have something that stays with you. It's got to touch you on some level, not just emotionally, but also thematically. It's got to express something that's kind of collective, and we all understand that we recognize this is an echo. This shows something. This tells us something about who we are, who we want to be, something. Don't this didn't. You're telling me that a movie that basically says, "Watch out for those friendly, wealthy liberals who voted for Barack Obama. They will fuck you up and down." That is not something that strikes a chord with me.
I feel that even people that ended up putting it at the top of their 10 best list at the end of the year, even those people, when they were watching Get Out in February or March when it came out, did not expect that movie to top their 10 best list.
Uh-huh.
I don't, and I don't even think those same people thought that Get Out would be one of the three best picture contenders left.
Yeah.
It's just like the momentum that happened with Get Out is almost unexplainable. Does it have to do with Universal and the campaign, the masterful campaign that they just brought?
Oh, come on! It's not. Yeah, you can call it masterful. I think it's out of touch with this concept I would call reality. You know, the film for the ages. They took that from Esquire. Was it an Esquire piece? No, it was Vanity Fair, a woman who, a POC who wrote for Vanity Fair and said, this is a film for the ages. And they grabbed that. It's not a film for the ages? I mean, you know, Raging Bull is a film for the ages, okay. And, you know, I mean, there's several films that I could point to that say, yeah, this is something that resonates. It will work 15 years from now, or work 50 years. It would have worked 10 years ago. You know, it's really got that thing. There's no addressing this. It's insane. And I will be so delighted if it doesn't win Best Original Screenplay, which I think it's probably going to win, though, I imagine. Despite Martin McDonagh's Three Billboards having... Apparently, a lot of people believe that's going to win, but I have a feeling that people are going to vote for it because they sense that maybe Get Out won't win in Best Picture. But what you're saying is that here's what I will give Get Out, and I don't think there's any ambiguity about this. The people that like it really like it, and as you have pointed out, the people that are saying that, you know, maybe Guillermo's film and maybe McDonagh's film and maybe Lady Bird, whatever, they're all measured in their assessments. They're nobody's really doing backflips over those films. But the people that do like Get Out are very impassioned. But you got to remember now, come on, the people that are most in favor of Get Out, the ones that were interviewed by Vulture recently, the 18%, the people that were were added to the Academy rolls over the last 2 years, the younger people, people of color, whatever, that's 1 in 5. Now, you can say there's a lot of heat, but you know, you're a younger person. We all talk to a lot of, we hear a lot of younger people. There's a lot of younger people in journalism. You have to consider 1 in 5 is definitely in the Get Out camp. Is that really something you can say for the other 4/5 of the Academy, that they're all sort of feeling maybe that's the one to vote for? Maybe, I mean, there's a lot of people who feel as I do, which is, yes, sure, okay, definitely enjoyed it, but take it easy. It's not this, you know, Best Picture, and there's a lot of people that feel that way.
Yeah, but there's also people that are saying Get Out cannot win are also giving the evidence, quote-unquote, that BAFTA completely shunned it. And that no...
That is true. It did shun it, so you can't... That's true.
But it's a very American movie at the same time.
Sure, yeah.
So it's not something that would connect as well with the British as it would with
but Daniel Kaluuya, he's British, no?
Right, yeah, but there's no hint of, you know, British in this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
It's an American experience.
Yeah, right.
And also the other fact is that no film with less than 5 nominations has ever won in 84 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So there's that. Yeah. I mean, get out's representation in the other categories is very, very,
Slim. Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing. I mean, even Kaluuya's Best Actor nomination is questionable, to say the least. I mean, and the original screenplay, I think it's going to win original screenplay.
Okay. As a compensation factor, do you think, or what?
I don't know.
Because the general thing is that McDonough has it, right? I mean, that's what a lot of people have been saying. So,
I think McDonough is winning screenplay because
original screenplay.
The quality is a little more specific when it comes to the writing award.
Yeah.
But I mean, imagine Get Out wins Best Picture and doesn't even win screenplay.
That would be strange.
That would be so strange. But it's been such a strange year that like no particular movie really has the backing of the majority. I mean, really, I just have a feeling Get Out is winning, and I'm sticking by that prediction. But
yeah.
At the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if Shape or Three Billboards wins. Has this been the most unpredictable Best Picture race you've ever covered?
Yeah, I can't remember my being on the fence about whether one of three possibilities is going to win. I don't. One of two, obviously, that every race comes down to that. But one of three is what it boils down to, because nobody's, unfortunately, giving any real sincere chances of Lady Bird or Dunkirk or Call Me By Your Name, which are by far the three best nominated films in my book. By far the best. And, the other thing that we just have to say for the record, basically, the reason you think that Get Out's going to make it is because the preferential ballot is that, people vote for a film at the top of their list, and if that film doesn't have enough ones, those votes sort of fall off and go to the number two. And if the number two doesn't reach a consensus, then you go to number three. And what we're thinking is that maybe Get Out is a number two or three with a lot of people, and there'll be enough people who have it as two or three that it'll collect aggregately the enough votes to win. Right? Something like that?
Yeah, if there ever was a year where, that could happen, it's this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you know what, all over the place, I don't know the people that you've spoken to, but the people I've spoken to over the last 12 months, or more over the last 3-4 months, when 10 best lists were being
right.
made, everyone had a different favorite movie. It's just been that kind of year where you don't have a Boyhood or even last year a Moonlight. Or the year before that with 12 Years a Slave. You don't have a movie that everyone is just backing together, or at least a majority is backing together. You don't have that this year. That could be very problematic for Three Billboards and or Shape of Water. But for Shape of Water, I think it's winning directing.
I don't think there's any doubt about Guillermo winning for Best Director. That's a pretty locky thing, and he's really gotten the love everywhere he's shown up. And BAFTA didn't happen, but for picture, of course. But still, so I don't think there's any question about that.
And he's just an overall nice guy, and that goes a long way into winning an Oscar. He's really, really well liked. The only upset I could think of is maybe Christopher Nolan, and that was really an overall directorial achievement.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
I can see him potentially upsetting, but I think it's Del Toro's.
Yeah. So I got to say one thing. How many times have you seen The Shape of Water? How many times?
I've only seen it once.
I saw it once in Toronto. I missed it. No. What am I talking about? I saw it in Telluride, and then I saw it again here at the because Tatiana hadn't seen it, and we went to see it at the West Side Pavilion. And any time that I am a little, I gave it an 8. You know, I didn't put it down. I didn't pan it, but I said it's good with reservations. The reservations being that Michael Shannon's character is really over the top, and he's not interesting to see a guy with his fingers falling off and his just finding new ways of expressing loathing and kind of toxic male vulgarity. And he seems to have been told, just act as make up your own lines, but just make this guy the worst, ugliest, scummiest motherfucker you've ever seen in a movie. And that's not interesting after a while. You've got to have, you got to have a bad guy who has a little something good about him, and you got to have a good guy who has something a little bad. It's just dull. And I got to tell you, after seeing it the second time, I came away and I didn't like it as much. I mean, the first time I liked it. I was happy I was seeing something that, for me, represented a return to Pan's Labyrinth, that type of filmmaking. And I was very happy for Guillermo that he had done that. But I didn't like it as much the second time. I don't know how many people have seen it twice. But
yeah, I'm probably going to watch it again either tonight or tomorrow night before the ceremony.
Yeah.
But one thing that I really took in from that only screening of Shape of Water was how empty it was, and there wasn't really much substance to it except for the fact that, you know, it was an entertaining movie.
Yeah.
It was a fairy tale that had plot holes.
Mm-hmm.
It was visually beautiful. I mean, everything he does is you know, purely visual.
Yeah.
But I predicted exactly where it was going every step of the way, and I don't think a film like that really deserves to win Best Picture. It reminds me of The Artist in a way. Something that's visually beautiful but empty, and an exercise in style. And I can't see people voting for this to win.
Yeah.
There's something missing in that movie, and once
logic.
One thing I noticed was once Buzz really started for The Shape of Water, and it was the unofficial Best Picture. At some point in time, it would be Best Picture contender, the leader. There was a small little backlash that started because people were like, that's it.
Uh-huh.
After watching it, they were like, you know, that's the movie that's going to win Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved on to Three Billboards, and then people saw Three Billboards and they were like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the movie that's Best Picture. So now, by default, we have Get Out, which people are like, oh, yeah, I saw it in February. That was quite a good movie.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's where we're at right now. People, having seen Get Out in February, March, very low expectations, and quite liking it. And now it's, in my books, the unofficial frontrunner. Strange year.
Yeah, very strange year. I could let it go right now, but here we are at the end. All right, we all know Gary Oldman's going to win. There's nothing worth talking about that. I wish that it was something more unusual. I wish that Timothy Chalamet would had more of a chance, but apparently he doesn't. I don't know what is there to say about that. I really wish that Allison Janney weren't locked in to win Best Supporting Actress. It would be much more interesting and much more of a, if it were like a neck and neck thing between Allison Janney and Laurie Metcalf, who is really so much more interesting and so much better in Lady Bird, because she's, as everybody has said, that Allison Janney is basically, it's a satirical performance. She's over the topping it pretty much at every step, and she's saying to the camera and to the audience, look at what a loathsome deplorable I am. Look at what a cigarette-smoking, ugly life form I am. And I'll turn it on even more just to make you give you a good ride. But it's just a performance about an attitude, about a very imprecise and not very perceptive take on the way people are and what they're like. And it just seemed to me like,
I'm picking Elton John to win, but something tells me that Metcalf could upset.
Or Leslie Manville. Wouldn't that be great if that would be delightful? Because, you know.
Yeah, that would be fantastic too if Manville upset. This is the category where there could potentially be an upset. There could be Metcalf upsetting or Manville.
Yeah.
One of those two. But, I mean. Yeah. Does Lloyd Metcalf have a puncher's chance? I think she does.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be very, very hard to overcome Allison Janney. She's been a real charmer this entire award season.
Right.
And she's just been in Hollywood for forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the prize is hers to lose. Yeah. Even though Metcalf again, that would be a great story if she wins.
Yeah.
Really, really
yeah.
Be a great, great story if she wins.
And there's nothing to say about supporting actor either, but that's been a Rockwell lock since he's all of a sudden Willem Dafoe who won all through December with all the critics groups. It was Willem Dafoe, Willem Dafoe, Willem Dafoe, Willem Dafoe. It never stopped. Okay, he's going to win. And then boom, he stopped winning. And then all of a sudden it was Rockwell, Rockwell, Rockwell. Forget Dafoe, he had the chance. So, okay. So I guess that's it.
Yeah, you're right. At some point Dafoe, you know, had a chance to win, but now it's just Rockwell.
Yeah.
I mean, you speak to anyone.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it that it's Sam Rockwell.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, another easy category to predict.
Right.
I don't think there's much at all at this stage. For editing, I find that it could be between, that Baby Driver could upset, but I am picking Dunkirk to win. The editing is incredible.
And well, it's like Tom O'Neill said time and again, it's not the best acting, it's the most acting that tends to win. And
yeah.
I think that the reason Baby Driver is probably going to win because it has the most editing. You remember that all the editing, all the cuts in those car chase scenes. And you don't remember, at least I don't, the editing being... it's not the kind of editing that tends to sink into your consciousness. It's just expert and professional and very well chosen. There isn't it's seamless, it's you know, it's perfect but it doesn't stand out for some reason. So
you're predicting Baby Driver to win.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would be an upset. That would definitely be an upset. Because
I'm just going by the idea that if you notice it, it stays in your mind. People tend to vote for it. And I remember the editing more than I did, however sublime and well handled it was,
yeah.
The editing for Dunkirk. I prefer that Dunkirk win as many things as possible because it happens to be one of the best films of the year, no question. But anyway.
Yeah, some of the very best car chase movies, it's all about the editing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Driver,
yeah.
You know, Drive.
Yeah.
And Baby Driver is great entertainment because the editing,
mm-hmm.
Car chasing.
So best adapted, we all know that it's going to be Book Call Me By Your Name. Why did I just blank on his name? Jesus. 80, he'll be the oldest winner of...
James Ivory.
Ivory. God.
Yeah.
So that's...
Remember when he was all the rage in the 90s?
Yeah.
Remains of the Day, yeah. Howard's End.
Yeah.
I think he's winning. That would be great.
Yep. And we've already decided that original is probably going to go to Three Billboards, but everybody changed their minds on Gold Derby, and they now think Get Out's going to win.
Because we won the WSC.
The best cinematography.
But, Yeah. So cinematography.
That's going to be a Deacons because he's been ignored, right? Is that what's happening right now?
Right, but they don't mark the cinematographer's name on the ballots. They just mark the movie title.
Yeah.
That's what's got the... So uninformed voters might not know that it's Roger Deakins, and if they don't, they shouldn't really be voting for the Academy Awards in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, some people say Rachel... I heard someone say Rachel Morrison might upset from Mudbound, you know?
That would be really nice. I would, just for the sake of Rachel Morrison, who did an excellent job, is easily the single best facet for me of that film, apart from Mary J. Blige and Jason Mitchell's performances. So that would be wonderful if that happens. I don't think that Blade Runner... You know what? There's no question that Hoyt Van Hoytema's cinematography in Dunkirk was the most thrilling and exciting, and it just made me... like sit up in my seat and my mouth was open with how much I was enjoying the whole thing. I was just really knocked out. To dismiss that and say that, well, yeah, it was fine, but Roger Deakins hasn't won and we got to give it to him, you know, because this is near the end of his career. So I understand that thinking, but it's kind of makes bends my head around.
Well, 14 nominations for Roger Deakins.
Yeah.
And I don't even think he's at the end of his career. He's probably, if he stays healthy, he can probably give us another 8-9 movies.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
He's a workaholic.
Yeah,
He shoots a movie every year.
Yeah.
He photographs a movie every year, which is incredible. I hope he continues to work with the Coen brothers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I really am more interested in when it comes to Roger Deakins.
Yeah, right.
They're great. So I guess he's finally gonna win it.
Yeah.
Even though Storaro didn't get nominated.
Yeah.
Should have gotten nominated.
I don't know what to say about makeup and hairstyling. I guess it's Darkest Hour, I guess, because of the way Gary Oldman looked. I don't know what to say about production design. Obviously there's a very commanding sense of follow through in terms of the production design of Shape of Water, I guess so. I mean, you could, but I think that Blade Runner was really the knockout. So I would hope that might win. That's Dennis Gasmer, right? Dennis Gasmer. I don't know. The score. I can't even hum the Coco theme song. Remember Me. I honestly can't hum it. I'd like to. You know, I like a good tune as much. I can't hum it. But I can definitely, and I didn't like This Is Me. I mean, to me, the Mystery of Love, this Sufjan Stevens, is that how you pronounce it? Sufjan?
Yeah.
And that's cool that he's going to perform. He wasn't sure about that until relatively recently. Any thoughts about the song? Can you hum, remember, just hum a few bars. Can you hum it right now?
Not really.
Okay, see? It's not coming to mind, so...
But have you seen The Greatest Showman?
Yes, I saw it. Yeah.
That could upset, maybe.
This Is Me. Okay. It's very strident. It's very strident. Wow. It's about sell, that movie. They sell the hell out of it in every shot. Everything is... you know, emphasis, and the performances. I mean, Jackman actually tries to play it cool and not overact, but everybody is just they're on stage. The spotlight is on them. They know that they're really pushing it. Zach is kind of calms down, but everybody else is really, really. And I just got tired. Really, it made me feel fatigued. All the effort in that movie.
You could tell just by the trailer that that what you're describing is exactly what the movie is.
Yeah.
Was the editing very, very ADD style, kind of like Moulin Rouge?
I don't think it was quite as Moulin Rouge as Moulin Rouge itself was, but it was certainly, the editor was really on it. The idea was to really impact and really sell and really, really deliver that thing. So
the movie did very well at the box office, and the soundtrack was number one on Billboard for a few weeks, I believe.
And Variety's Guy Lodge has seen The Greatest Showman once or twice, and there's been, I mean, more than the screening, and there have been sing-along screenings. Have you seen those advertised in Boston?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Actually, but it's a real crowd pleaser, though. The audiences seem to really, really liked it, and someone told me its IMDb rating is an 8 out of 72,000 votes.
Yeah.
And that's really saying something.
Mm-hmm.
As far as crowd pleasing goes.
How about the? Coco's going to win the best animated feature. Do you have any suspicions about documentary feature, best documentary?
Well, they didn't let the last men in Aleppo guys into the country
because of Trump's.
Because of some kind of visa problem, probably Trump related. And it didn't make the news a few days before Oscar voting even opened. So I would presume that it's going to get a lot of pity votes. I would love to see Icarus win.
I would love to see that win.
That's the documentary of the year for me.
Yeah. Although it does, I have to say, it does take a while. You keep waiting for when's the Russian doping thing going to come in? And, you know, aggressively, I mean. And finally, when he confesses, well, actually, I did, you know, preside over an elaborate doping program. Then it becomes very thrilling. But the first, was it 35 minutes, 40 minutes, when he's just trying to beat the system, and he goes through all these phases, the director, I mean.
Right.
And you know, you kind of say to yourself, well, when is this movie actually going to begin? So, anyway.
Did you Faces Places?
Finally saw it at the Santa Barbara Film Festival. I was delighted with it. I had a really good time. It has a real soul, and it's got it's calm, but it's very gripping at the same time. I love the idea of going from town to town and creating these art pieces on old buildings and whatnot. I think it's quite pretty, and relationship between Agnes Varda and what's the young guy's name? The guy with the shades?
Oh my god. I can't remember his name.
Anyway, he's the. I like that moment when. And she says, you know, you're hiding. Let me see your eyes. And she feels depressed at the end, and he takes his glasses off as a way of making her.
Yeah.
That was a nice moment.
So. His name is JR.
JR, okay.
Yeah. And that beautiful heartbreaking coda that has to do with Godard is also very 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 touching. And
what a dick! You know, how much of a dick do you have to be? Jean-Luc Godard knows Agnes Varda going back to the mid-50s, late-50s, and she comes to see him, and he won't even say hello. What an asshole! I mean, that's just—I don't care. You know, he can say, "Okay, I'll see you." But no cameras, or I don't want to be on camera, but let's have a cup of coffee, or let's have a drink, or let's have dinner. Okay, but to just blow her off, that was really a...
Reputation exceeds him. He's always been known as kind of a recluse asshole, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
and this movie only proved... that point.
Yeah,
I really loved Chase's Place. I thought there was it was small, artful, still a beautiful statement from a director that just keeps turning out the movies.
Sure.
She's on pace to make another movie soon. I think she's already working on her new movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And I love how she found a career in documentary.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Past, you know, the Nouvelle Vague thing.
She's
turned into a great, great, great nonfiction filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, wouldn't that be something if she Penguins. I don't think she's going to be at the awards, but...
Yeah, I noticed she hasn't made the rounds at all. I take, as you say that she's breaking down the film, that's great, but why not be here then, if she's, her health is okay, I presume?
Yeah, she can walk. She's like 89, 90 years old. She can still walk.
Mm-hmm.
She can hop on a plane and go to L.A. Why not? But I don't know if she's going to be at the ceremony. That would be great if she is.
Yeah. So what do you think about, I mean, I'm presuming that because A Fantastic Woman, besides being a good film and a touching film, is trans, and so it's because the trans thing is going to make, you know, the people from the new group are going to vote for it, en masse, I'm sure. I really respect and admire The Square. I was very, very impressed by the insult. I was knocked out by Loveless when I saw it last May. The whole thing, but I guess A Fantastic Woman has it because it has the PC points, and that's what determines things to a great extent, I think. Any thoughts?
It has the PC point, and also The Square is the anti-PC movie, and I think that movie probably rubbed a lot of people the wrong way who were voting for this category.
Mm-hmm.
And I, to tell you the truth, I love the message that The Square gives its audiences.
Yeah.
About almost a lack of freedom of speech in this day and age.
I'll always remember, my first thought when I think of The Square is there's many standout moments, but the thing that I recall the most is not so much the gorilla scene, but I remember it's the Tourette syndrome scene.
Yeah.
And there's a, you know, imagine being the significant other of somebody who has Tourette syndrome, and you bring that guy to a lecture, knowing what his want is, knowing what his tendencies are. And your rationale is, well, listen, I mean, he's an individual. He has rights. He pays taxes. Why does he have to be shut off in a corner or in a cage? Or, you know, he deserves to be here as much as anybody else. Answer, well, yeah, he does deserve to be here. He sure, you know, certainly shouldn't be kept out. But on the other hand, he's completely destroying a discussion, a legitimate discussion, completely ruining it. And in other words, it's all about your husband and his affliction. So therefore, that's what freedom is. That's what being deferring to the rights of everyone. Occasionally, it means that chaos reigns. It means that there's no respect for the speaker, for the topic, for anything. The whole thing is about this guy and his Tourette syndrome.
I told a friend many months ago, if there's a scene that perfectly describes 2017, it's that scene right there. And I find that, you know what, there were a lot of people that were peeved off that The Square won the Palme d'Or, but I think it deserved it.
Yeah.
Because it was a weird year at Cannes, and if you scroll through the competition, The Square is probably the best movie out of the 20-odd films they chose. I couldn't find another film that really was as good as The Square. So, but it's not going to win. There's no way The Square wins.
It's going to be the Fantastic Woman, you mean, right?
Yeah, Fantastic Woman is going to win.
Right.
The Square might have won the Palme d'Or, but it's not winning the Oscar.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
They might even bring the trans actress on stage too. After it wins,
right.
There's going to be a whole party on stage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can already see what's happening, and I mean, I expect also a lot of Me Too speeches to go on. On Sunday.
I think there's going to be some kind of Time's Up Me Too tribute moment.
There is, but that you know, that's not going to stop every single speech that we're going to see.
Okay.
To be about, you know, women's rights. And,
right.
I mean, it's going to be a very, very political Oscar telecast. I don't even know how Jimmy Kimmel's going to do it. I mean, he has to juggle a lot of things as host.
What do you mean, how he's going to do it? How he's going to manage the commentary so he doesn't say the wrong thing?
I mean, exactly. There's a lot of touchy subjects that he has to talk about. And, I mean, we are all in agreement about Trump. I mean, he's just going to lambast Trump.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But how is he going to approach the Me Too movement? How is he going to approach Harvey Weinstein's downfall?
Yeah,
it's gonna be interesting to watch. I thought he did a great job last year.
Sure. Yeah.
And I look forward to his hosting again.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'm gonna, I guess, do a final. This is what I think is gonna happen. I don't feel. I don't feel a lot of current, a lot of love, since my favorites are not likely to win in all the categories. The people that I really, that really touched me and that I felt very immensely, I was just very glad that I had absorbed their work, and I just didn't feel, this is compromised. This is like the people that are calling the shots this year, and thank goodness the fuddy-duddy, prototypical 62-year-old white guy Oscar voter is not calling the shots. Great, I love that. But I'm really not. I mean, did you read that piece that Vulture had? I mean, they don't give a damn about the movie at all. It's all about representation. It's all about, listen, it's time for other people and other criteria to be a key thing as far as you know, who gets the award. I mean, this thing of movies like The Post always winning because they were made to be Oscar, but I get that, and I completely think that's great that people are ignoring that suggestion from the boomer age and from the older Gen Xers that this is the kind of movie that should be a Best Picture of the Year. And if they want to reject that, okay, that's fine with me. But literally, they confirmed everyone's presumptions about them, that they are not into the soul of really great filmmaking. They're into who has made it and what the subject is, and it's all political.
That's probably what made Moonlight the winner last year, and it's probably what might benefit Get Out this year. Just the fact that, you know, Get Out is woke.
Yeah.
I for sure thought that this was going to be the year of the ladies.
That's what I thought that had to be. That's why I said, this is it, Lady Bird, let's go. Let's make, you know.
Yeah.
I'd be delighted if that happened, because I really respect and love Lady Bird, but It just, you know, you heard, I mean, you heard, I heard you say in summary, which is that it's... It's not exceptional enough. It's just another awkward girl in high school, kind of, you know, coping with this and falling out with this guy, and then, you know, it's just not enough. It doesn't add up to enough. It's just a good recollection, reminiscence of Greta's actual life to a large extent, recast in fictional form. But
I actually saw Lady Bird a second time, I am convinced it's a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way Greta directed the thing, the way she edited the thing, even the cinematography is really, really simple but beautiful. The score is outstanding. I mean, you know, it's just a simple slice of life, and it's such an infectiously joyous portrayal of growing up, and also the mother-daughter components are very, very touching.
Yeah.
I don't know. I found it was a movie that really benefited from repeat viewings. And also, one thing I noticed about Lady Bird is that there isn't a scene that lasts more than 2 minutes.
Ah, yeah.
Which is fantastic. It's episodic in the best ways imaginable. It just really traces this one year in the life of, you know, someone that's inspired by Greta Gerwig.
Yeah.
You know, it's beautiful. And you know what? I would really, really, really have loved to have seen Saoirse Ronan win for this.
That would be delightful. It would be really great. I mean, I would be. See, you got to feel something. I can recall that in 2004 when Polanski's film, did everyone surprised because they thought that his history with the you know the statutory rape the whole thing and the 70s. And then people were saying that he has to be denied anything. And then when Ronald Harwood won for was it Adapted, and then Adrian Brody, and then Polanski won for Best Picture. I said, "This is amazing!" And I was really feeling the this is so great. And then of course I didn't believe it would really win, but I could see that people were wondering what's happening here. What happened to the inevitable Chicago? That was wonderful, that moment. So
that was one of my very, very favorite Oscar moments, and then Adrian Brody won as well.
Yeah.
He upset Daniel Day-Lewis and Jack Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this past week, Natalie Portman came out and said, "Oh, she regrets working with." Or was it working with Polanski? I don't know if she ever worked with Polanski, but she regrets defending him, I think she said. So now, I mean, it's not just Woody Allen, it's Roman Polanski as well. That's you know, getting it from all sides.
Yeah. If Adrian Brody were to... If somehow The Pianist was a 2017 contender, and Brody. Mm-hmm. And if he had come on and kissed the presenter, as he did Halle Berry way back when, he would be his career would be over.
Oh yeah.
Because that's like a very presumptuous kind of toxic male thing to do. Oh, I'm gonna kiss you, baby, because I'm really the winner now, and I'm just. Lean back and enjoy it, baby. Here it comes. Boom. You know, it's like the guy in Times Square. That picture, right? The people have said that moment was not particularly very nice, not very appealing. And that nurse who was happened to be walking by, you know, I mean, they did this whole thing about, you know, what would that really be an iconic moment? And it was given today's, I mean, for decades, it was an expression of relief and joy and ecstasy and thank God the war is over and I'm not going to have to go invade Japan and maybe get killed. It was just this thing. But it became recast as a moment of...
It was such a beautiful moment when Brody...
Yeah.
Made out with her just randomly on stage. Yeah, you can't get away with that today.
Yeah.
You just can't. Someone's gonna scream, "Me too."
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know what a moment that was. You know, if they ever look back on the 10 or 20 greatest Oscar moments of all time, that has to be up there.
Yeah. Here's a reaction, by the way, about. Beatty and Dunaway representing Best Picture. Mark Harris saying, "The reaction to the Beatty-Dunaway in my feed is a reminder that a large number of the otherwise impeccably woke out there are absolutely awful about older people." I presume there was a lot of catty, like, well, you know, they got it wrong, they were too, you know, doddered and too blinkered and too, you know, too old to have responded in a smart, intelligent way to what was obviously an error when Warren Beatty read Emma Stone, La La Land for Best Picture. I mean, it's very easy for us to sit here and say, well, we would have said, I mean, that's what I wrote. I would have said, something's wrong here. I'm sorry. Jimmy Kimmel has to come up here and look at this before I announce it. Just, where are you, Jimmy? And then just bring him on. At least... If we're going to say, yes, it is Emma Stone was the winner of the Best Picture. At least have bring Jimmy Kimmel in on it and have him agree that that was the appropriate call. I mean, but they didn't. And who are we to say? You don't know what it's like to be up there, and you have to make the decision. Just make it as smooth as possible. Don't point the. Make it be about yourself. Make it be about who won. And I understand the quiet panic they must have been, you know. But Beatty didn't want to say it. I know that he didn't like the idea of reading it. So he said, "You read it."
Oh, I remember that. That was very selfish, but it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But it wasn't Faye or Warren's fault. You know, it was what do we call him? The PricewaterhouseCooper. It was the guy responsible working for them, mm-hmm. who fucked it up.
Yeah.
And so none of the blame should go to Warren Beatty, even though he did end up, you know, mm-hmm. kind of putting Dunaway on the spot there and just telling her, "Here, read the envelope. Read the envelope. This is yours."
Yeah.
That's another one of the old timers for me, as mm-hmm. far as Oscar moments go.
Yeah.
I think it's up there with the very best moments that you know, when they'll do recap shows for the Oscars.
Yeah.
The most memorable moments, that will be probably in the top five. It has to be.
I talked to Scott Feinberg briefly. He had written a history or a minute by minute, if you will, of everything that went wrong. And it really would be an interesting documentary, because it's there's a lot of different voices who saw a lot of different things, and you see this poor man Brian Cullinan, Cullin, I think it was. He'll have this around his neck for the rest of his life. He'll never escape the shadow of it. Oh, you're the guy who, for the rest of his life, until he's 90 years old, he's going to hear that.
Yeah. He was fired, wasn't he?
No, he was not fired. He's with the company. He's just not in a public. He's not out there as a public representative. I went to the site and looked for what's her name, the woman who was his partner, and I don't see her on the site of Price Waterhouse. But he's there, all right. So.
But it was his screw up. It wasn't hers.
Was not hers. I'm just saying. I didn't see her name anywhere. So.
They must have had pity on him. They must have been like, "Poor guy. Poor guy, we have to keep him. We can't fire him."
Yeah. Because he...
Well, I hope something as exciting as that happens on Sunday, but I doubt it.
It's a high bar all of a sudden. We want something as good. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what will almost be as good. And that will be if Get Out wins, because I will fall on the floor. There are people like me who will be howling in pain if that happens. And I have to express that in the column. And it'll be a whole thing if that happens. So in a way, I'm almost savoring the idea of Get Out winning, because I can have I'll have a lot of fun writing about what an appalling cultural moment it is. But so it might happen. Who knows?
I think if Get Out wins, a lot of people are going to be going to your site. they're going to be waiting for your not just take on it, but.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. If it wins, I'm going to grab the digital recorder and talk it out immediately, and I'll write something, of course, but I'm going to talk it out. And say what I'm going to make some notes before it happens, just in case. But I have to. I mean, we've pretty much said it here. I said that the thing that you can't tell me, Jordan, that when you first saw that film at the AMC Plex on Tremont Street, right, with a big crowd,
yeah.
you can't tell me that if someone said to you, "Jordan, I'm telling you, I'm telling you the truth. This is going to win Best Picture." You're not telling me that you wouldn't be genuinely taken aback. if you were told that was the thing to win. I mean, it's popular, but it's not a Best Picture movie. It's a fucking genre movie. You know that as well. It's the way the culture is, the way the woke people are. If you even say that, he says this does not have the earmarks of something that feels as fully considered and is resonant and that echoes and that people can recognize themselves or their families, their culture, or whatever. It's so fucking bizarre that it's maybe about to win. It's just so weird that it's...
I told you by email, I feel like we're going to have to reinvent the idea of art itself. More than half of criticism now rates movies, TVs, books on, you know, whether they properly cheerlead women, gays, blacks, you know.
Yeah.
That's cultural criticism now.
Yeah.
I mean, you should look at the way they you know, pick the Pulitzers now. I mean, it's the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
You should read up on that. It's the exact same way how they pick Pulitzer Prize winners now.
Has a book in question or has a person in question said the right things and constructed or contributed in the right way to the betterment and the just made things better in terms of giving this group or this ethnic group this. You know, their fair share due. And if they haven't done that, and if they said something wrong, then they maybe don't deserve a Pulitzer. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Hmm.
Exactly. A lot of woke winners.
Yeah.
A lot of woke winners. And, but that's just how, art criticism has evolved.
Yeah.
I blame a lot of this on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Twitter has as much good as it might have brought to whatever kind of good that
mm-hmm.
may be.
Yeah.
Brought a lot of negativity to
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in a way, I mean, we have a Donald Trump presidency because of Twitter.
I think that Twitter certainly was definitely a factor in his, amongst the faithful anyway. But you can't bring up Trump and say that he got in because he did something right. You have to. The definitive thing is, he got in because Hillary Clinton did so many things wrong and is such a lousy candidate and someone that nobody really, really loved except for the genderists and the women who wanted to see a woman in, which I thought was a great thing in and of itself. And I would have been delighted if Elizabeth Warren or anyone that who was a good, strong, impassioned female candidate, but you can't say that Trump did things right. He did so many ugly, awful things, and he got it anyway because she was worse. She managed to fuck herself, and it's tragic. It's horrible what happened.
Well, you know what? I have been talking to a few people about 2020 recently, and I really think that Trump has a good chance of getting reelected. And the only possible way I see the Democrats winning is if they pick a minority candidate to get that black vote, someone like Kamala Harris.
I love Kamala Harris, but she has this vibe that's like really angry. She's very, very.
Yeah.
And I don't think she has that enveloping "love me, I love you" Obama feeling. She's a good person. I love her priorities. She's really a. I think she's great, but I don't think she can quite do it. I have a feeling. I don't know. I would love it if she could.
She would definitely get the black vote, and I think that's very important.
Well,
so.
But she's she's a person of color, but she's not really black. She's Indian and part South African, isn't that it? She's in the.
I had read it. It's more than just part South African, but
mm-hmm.
I'll take your word for it. I don't know, because if you have, I read or I saw a video this week about how the Democrats have lost 11% of their potential black female votes over the past year.
They have lost 11% of their...
11% of the potential black female voters.
And how have they managed that?
Excuse me?
How have the Democrats lost 11% of the...
I think it has to do with not almost ignoring that demographic in a way in terms of the priorities that the Democratic Party has compared to what black female voters are looking for in a candidate.
Do you think Cory Booker could make it in 2020, or do you think he's does he have that X factor thing going? Or
I don't know. Cory Booker. I know the Bernie Sanders contingent does not like him at all. They don't even like Kamala Harris.
Wow.
Yeah.
The Bernie people, the Bernie bots, don't like Kamala Harris because she's not pure enough in the Bernie sense.
Exactly.
Whoa. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, they're gonna probably bring some help to the party again in 2020. They're probably gonna divide the party again. You know, and this coming from someone that really, really liked Bernie Sanders. I thought he was great. I wouldn't put it past him, going for it again in 2020, even at his old age. But I think they might screw over the Democrats' chances again in 2020. That's how it looks like.
Yeah.
On social media and everything. I mean, you know, they hate Cory Booker for adhering to pharma companies. And they really hate Kamala. You should read up on this.
I didn't realize that they really hated it, as you're saying, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of maddening. I've kind of distanced myself from that movement a bit, because, I mean, we, in a way, you need some sort of unity in the Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
and there's none of that right now. So, you know, there's actually a few intriguing articles online about Bernie Sanders' voters and their black women problem.
Yeah.
It's definitely worth a read. I'll send you a few links, but
okay.
Hey, I still love Bernie.
I loved him all the way through, but I was infuriated that he lost. Basically, his whole momentum was stopped because Southern black voters just didn't like him. They just didn't feel he had that thing that they want in a candidate, which is someone who understands their culture and is one of them, and who, you know, they just felt he was too much of a white guy for them from Vermont. They said, we're not voting for him. I don't care. I said, but guys, look at what he did. Look at his record. Look at his civil rights demonstrations way before anybody was doing it. This guy is a believer, and we don't care. He's the wrong type. We don't like his white hair and his white guy. You know, that's it. They wouldn't do it. It was one of the stupidest things I've ever felt or heard from any. Yeah, and of course I was castigated for saying that the low information voters on the down south ruined it for him, and they did.
Well, that's kind of what happened. I mean, if a picture of Bernie Sanders, a young Bernie Sanders, getting arrested in the civil rights movement rally is not enough for you to vote for this guy.
Yeah.
You remember that black and white picture that came out?
Which one? Say again?
The black and white picture that came out of Bernie Sanders being arrested at a civil rights rally.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, that picture was so invigorating and so inspiring.
Mm.
And you're telling me that if you're a black voter and that picture and you still don't want to vote for this guy, I don't know. I mean, there was so much passion.
Yeah.
In his campaign for the presidency in the primaries that I don't know. I mean, I would love for him to do it again, but at the same time, it's running the risk of, you know, deja vu happening again and the division between the progressive left and the moderate left.
The final analysis is, I think it's been pretty well... is that I think that the rural voters who regard politically correct militant lefties with no admiration and a little bit of fear, the idea of voting for someone from that side, as much as they might think Trump is a joke, they really hate the militant Stalinist left. And they don't want to vote for someone who is part of that crowd, and that's what a lot of people feel about the left now. They see this you know, the PC points are everything, and identity is everything, and it's just you know, if you're part of the militant left and you're seeing advancements in terms of representation, and it's all to the good, but it doesn't feel good to average folks out there, and they just see a kind of a craziness going on.
I really fear that the militant left is making the Democrats lose potential voters.
Potential what?
I fear that is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people are just sick and tired, and they'd rather vote for a Trump who is non just as a protest vote.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and that's where we're at right now. I really truly believe that is exactly what is happening. It's almost like it's self-destruction.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
So the only way for her to work is that some rock star has to pop through pretty soon. I guess everybody's deliberately waiting until the 2018 elections have happened. But, you know, somebody's got to come along, and it's got to be somebody who's very well-liked and has so many pluses that are better than Trump, and that way it can maybe work. But who's that going to be? I don't see it. I don't see who's it going to be. I mean, if it is Kamala Harris, I would love it, and I hope that she makes the attempt. But I just don't see. I don't see the charisma coming from her. She just doesn't seem to have it. But I would love it if she makes a run for it and she makes headway.
Yeah, I mean, they'll tell her to smile a little more, and hopefully it won't look forced.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on the side, we have Oprah Winfrey saying that if God tells her to run, she will run.
I don't really like her at all, that for her having said, well, it was a nice idea. I like it as an idea. I don't know that it's much more than that. I was intrigued. But I didn't feel it was, you know, I don't know if I'm necessarily cut out for it. I'm not. I mean, she seems so caught up in her own little imaginings, her own sort of, you know. I just don't feel that she's really. I mean, she had that moment. She really connected at the Golden Globes, and I would have been loved it if she could, you know, do it. You know, I would have loved it. But this kind of wondering and have this kind of meditative discussion with herself. I'm not sure that I'm necessarily cut out for it. Maybe I'm not a politician type, but I certainly love the questions, and I'm certainly going to be there if somebody else runs. You know, she just said, no guts. You know, if you're going to do it, you should do it. And if you're going to be cagey about it and say, you know, maybe I will. Who knows? I'm thinking about it. You know, I would respect that, but she seems so kind of flaky. You know?
I think she didn't even think about running. Oprah Winfrey did not even think about running until she gave that speech at the Golden Globes, and everyone on social media said she needs to be the next president.
Yeah.
She probably didn't even think about 2020 until people on social media started touting her as a great future president. She should run, and then, like, you know, she was put on the spot there, and you know, she has, you know, she has.
Is she stupid? She knows what's going on. She knows there's no rock star in the wings as we speak. She knew that.
Yeah.
What'd she think people are going to say? She's a woman of color who's brilliant and well-loved by tens of millions and probably would present a really strong challenge and could probably beat Trump, if you ask me, probably, if she really believed. And so what she thinks going to happen when she gives that speech? People are just going, oh, nice speech, Oprah, good for you, you know. Of course they're going to mention her electability.
People know that she can beat Trump. That's
yeah.
the thing. She doesn't need to run a smooth campaign or a flawless campaign.
Yeah.
She's Oprah. Like, she can win against Trump. And people saw her as, like, the savior. Oh, please let us... Free us from this man. Free us from this man.
Yeah.
Because right now there's nobody else. That's the thing. You know, you're right about that. You know, Kamala Harris has her major flaws, and you know, Cory Booker.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying Kamala has flaws. I'm just saying I don't think she's very lovable. She's good, but she's not. She's not charismatically lovable. And I love her, and I want to be with her. I want to support her. She's got a pissed off look in her eye, and with great justification. But she does have this thing about her that's not really galvanizing. I mean, I love her on when she's interrogating bad guys on the committees, yeah. And you know, she's beautiful. I would love it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, one more kid. Yeah. it's you know, it's a party that's in turmoil. I mean. You know,
yeah.
what's going on there? I mean, you know, I'm Canadian, but I'm seeing the Democrats trying to find some kind of identity here.
Huh?
Because Trump bashing can only take you so far. The resistance is great, but you need to start to find your own ideology.
Yeah.
And where you stand on things. And right now they haven't figured that out. But you're saying that Kamala Harris comes off as being unlikable, right? Or
strident. A very smart person, but not the sort of person that makes you want to have a beer with her or go to her party and give her a hug or something. You know, she just doesn't convey that. She's just who she is, and she's a person who's very tough and can stand up to all the right-wing motherfuckers that you want to throw at her. And that's what I love about her. And maybe people can get past the warmth or lack of warmth factor. But she is great. I mean, I think she's wonderful, and I'd love it if she could make it. I'd love it.
Yeah, but, you know, a counterpoint would be that Trump is the biggest asshole in the world, and he got elected.
Yeah, yeah.